Broadcasting from the pulpit of sports radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
Got a Game 7 tonight here. Christian Arcan, Sunday Mass. Nice to have you with us here today on this beautiful Sunday morning, the 22nd of June. Nice day for a Game 7. It's supposed to get really hot today, right, Dave? Is it really hot there yet? It's like about, supposed to be like 102 degrees today, isn't it? Am I crazy?
My watch says 82 right now, but I've been here since 8, so I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll see. It was raining this morning where I am. But either way, it's winner take all. It's Game 7. It's the NBA Finals. Probably one of the least anticipated Game 7s in the history of the NBA. I'd say it's got to be right up there based on these two teams and based on just how little interest there's been, period, already. But if you're, first of all, I mean, it's about to just be baseball and nothing else for another month and a half until we get to August and eventually to preseason football. So you might want to drink this in a little bit here for sports fans. That's what I'm doing. And not because I care that much about the Pacers or the Thunder, but there is one aspect of this that could be interesting outside of it just being a Game 7, and that is if the Thunder lose, we're talking about an all-time choke job here, right? An all-timer. The Oklahoma City Thunder won 68 games this year. They were up 3-2. They have the MVP of the league. They have two all-NBA players. And I need to check and see how many all-defense guys they have. I was supposed to do that during the break. The all-defensive teams. Dort is on the first team. Second team is Jalen Williams. So they got two all-defense, two all-NBA, the MVP of the league, and a 68-win season. And they might lose to the Pacers here tonight. And if they do, that will be considered, in my opinion, one of the all-time, an all-time choke job, an all-time gag job from that team. And it's weird to say that about a team like the Thunder. And the reason why it's weird is because they just emerged as a dominant team this year. This was their first really great season since the Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, all those guys started playing together. This has been their first year where they really were a force. And that's the problem with the NBA right now. And it's a big problem. The NBA's got a big problem here. There is no dominant team in this league. The Thunder were in Indy with a chance to close them out, and they played one of the worst games I've ever seen in Game 6. They were horrible. They gave that game away, literally. The turnovers, ugh. A tough game to watch. Really, it wasn't an exciting game. There's been some games all throughout the playoffs this year where one team gets out to like a 20-point lead, but at the very least, there's some kind of comeback. Celtics, it happened a bunch. With the Knicks and the Pacers, it happened a bunch. But that thing, game six, that was brutal. That was a brutal game to watch. And I wasn't rooting for Oklahoma City. I would have been happy to watch a close game and the Pacers come back and win. But the Pacers got out to a lead and never gave it back, and that was it. And you sort of watch that and you think, okay, this Oklahoma City Thunder team, this is supposed to be the one we're all scared of here. This team that can't close out. Gimpy Tyrese Haliburton, who admittedly played a very good game, as did Siakam. Did you see Siakam before the game? Did anyone happen to see that video clip of Pascal Siakam? Dave, you know what I'm talking about? They're all huddled up, and they're about to run through the tunnel. And Pascal Siakam leans his head back, and like his eyes rolled into the back of his head. It was like he was having an exorcism. It was like the Undertaker. Yes, it was. It was like the Undertaker, and also like, I don't know how to say this on a Sunday morning without getting in trouble, but it was almost like something really great was happening to him at that moment, if I'll just leave it there. You know, like he was having a really good time, and it was so that his eyes rolled back in his head, like that type of thing. I think that's acceptable. Anyway, he had a good game. Haliburton was very good, and the Thunder looked terrible. I mean, the Thunder were just constantly turning the ball over. Lazy possessions, lazy passes, just a lazy game. No referee interference, nothing like that. I mean, that was very clear that there was one team playing for their lives and another team who was just ready for Game 7 and didn't really care that much about that game at all. And that's why it's hard for me to look at this Thunder team and think, yeah, this is the next dynasty. Not the Celtics, not the Bucks, not the Nuggets, not the Lakers, not any of these other teams that have won championships over the last 6 years. This is going to be the team. This is going to be the one. I don't think so. I don't even know if they're going to win tonight. I think they should win tonight, but I'm not going to bet on it. I'm not betting this game tonight. I have no idea which version of the Oklahoma City Thunder we're going to see. Or, for that matter, which version of the Pacers we're going to see either. Because as we remember, there were games with the Celtics, guys were hurt. And they'd come out and they'd play their ass off for one game, and then the next game is the decider, and they can't answer the bell. So this might be one of those games where Halliburton, he gets all, you know, gets all numbed up before game six, but now game seven, and they can't quite do it the same. We'll see. I think in the end, it's going to be one of those situations where whoever wins, it's going to be kind of lackluster. The parade through Oklahoma City is going to be depressing. We know it is. Indiana, that'll probably be all right. You know, there's a lot of basketball fans in Indy. But the Oklahoma City, if they have a parade through downtown OKC, it's going to be pretty sad, I think. They could probably just have a rally. You know, they don't need to have a parade. They could just have the rally and have everyone show up, make it look like there's more people there than they actually are. You know, that's probably the way to go if you don't want to make it seem kind of sad. Because a parade through a town where it's like a small market anyway, I don't know how many people even live in Oklahoma City and how many of them are even fans of the team, but I guess we'll find out, assuming that the Thunder take care of business tonight. But this is a problem for the NBA. This is a real problem. You got to have a dominant team. And right now, you just don't. Right now, you just don't. It was supposed to be the Celtics. I thought it was going to be the Celtics. Everyone thought it was going to be the Celtics. And what happened this year? The Celtics were good. They were a top three team in basketball, but they weren't dominant. They were looking up at the Cleveland Cavs all year long, and also the Thunder. Those two teams were better than the Celtics the entire year, even when the Celtics were playing at their best. And what happened to Cleveland? Nothing. They get knocked out in the playoffs, just like you did. So the two dominant teams in the East don't even make it to the conference finals. And in fairness, the dominant team in the West did survive all the other good teams in the West, and they made it to the finals, and good for them. So if there was going to be, if you're asking me the two teams playing tonight, which one has more of a chance to be the next dynasty, it's obviously the Thunder. But I'm not sure the Thunder have what it takes either. And I'm starting to wonder if it's going to be, if this is just what the NBA is going to be now. And I hate to put it in these terms because I hate this expression, but like an everybody gets a trophy kind of league, that's where we're at. 7-8 years, and I'm not one of those people who thinks that's the worst thing in the world. Okay, I'm a millennial. I'm an old millennial. I'm 43 years old. That's the oldest I think a millennial can be. And I hated that everybody gets a trophy crap. You know why? Because it was the boomers who kept saying it, and the boomers were the one handing the trophies out. You don't want to hand out trophies to everybody? Well, don't complain about it afterwards. Oh, everybody gets a trophy in this generation. Yeah, where do you think we got the trophies from? Who do you think handed them to us? Ourselves? You think we went to the trophy store? Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, like that whole thing I thought was annoying. And so I'm not saying everyone gets a trophy like it's this dumb, you know, thing. But I do think for the NBA, it's not great. For kids' sports, fine. Give them trophies. Who cares? For the NBA, for the National Basketball Association, more than any of the other sports, I would say, has had some of the great dynasties in organized professional sports anywhere in the world. Jordan's Bulls. Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, the 80s Celtics, the 80s Lakers, the Celtics of the 60s, the Golden State Warriors, the Heat, the Spurs. There's a lot of the Bad Boy Pistons. There's a lot of great ones. And right now, there's nothing. Right now, there's nothing. It's the flavor of the week. Well, who's the flavor of this year? It's the Celtics' turn. They get their championship. Okay. Well, who's next? Gilgeous Alexander, his turn to be the MVP. They get a championship. Here comes Giannis for his. Here comes Jokic for his. Here comes, you know, whoever else. Like, it's just this cycle. Next team up. Okay, you get here. Come get your championship. And maybe for a new generation of fans, and maybe I just sound like an old crotchety man right now, maybe for a new generation of fans, that's okay. They don't need to have a dominant team. They don't need to have a big dynasty that everyone's trying to knock off. But for me, that's how the NBA has always been. That's been a hallmark of this league, and it's made it great. I think without that, you don't have a great league. I think you have a very good, fun, competitive league, but I don't think it's great. And when I say great, I mean the TV product and the drama and all that other stuff. When Michael Jordan was playing and the Knicks were trying to beat him every single year and the Pacers were trying to beat him every single year and they didn't know who was coming out of the West, but whoever it was had to look across the court while that song played and say, oh my God, here comes Michael Jordan. Oh my God, here comes Stephen Curry. Oh, my God, here comes LeBron. Here comes Tim Duncan. Here comes whoever. When that's not there, when that element of the competition is missing, when there's no big, bad boss dynasty team to try and knock off, and it's everyone just has an equal shot all the time, that, I'm sorry, that sucks. I think that sucks. And from an entertainment perspective, maybe from a competitive perspective, it's fine. And if you're playing in the NBA, that's great for you. You got much more of a chance to win now maybe than you did before. Great. But for us watching, it sucks. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to the phone. Steve is in the car. He has a thought on Rafael Devers. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Christian. Great show.
Hey, Steve. Thank you.
Listen, everybody's talking money dump, right? This wasn't a money dump. If he went to first base, he's still on the team, right?
Probably, yeah.
John Henry went to Kansas City, and he said, I'm not doing it. You have to get rid of him, no matter if you're making $300 million or you're making the league minimum.
Okay, but Steve, that doesn't – but hold on, Steve. Steve, just a second. That doesn't mean it's not a money dump, because if they wanted to trade him, they could have traded him, paid half the contract, and gotten a better return. They wanted someone who was going to take all the money, and then they didn't get a good return for it.
Well, I agree, but, you know, people are saying the main reason he's gone is money. That's not the main reason he's gone. The main reason he's gone is because in any workplace, if you tell your boss no, you're not going to be employed much longer.
You're right about that, Steve. Yeah, absolutely.
It just so happens that he's the highest paid guy on the team, right? And then people are talking about, oh, they got rid of him just for the money. No, not even that was not the case.
Okay, I didn't hang up on you, but I'll say this. Not to parse this too much, because we're already kind of in the weeds here. The reason that Devers got traded wasn't on its face for the money. They had just given him the extension. And maybe there were some people that didn't want to, and maybe they were looking for a way out. That's all possible. I think that's all true. But when you talk about it being a salary dump, it's not to say that they just wanted to get rid of the money. But when they decided that they had to trade him for those reasons that you just said, and those are all legitimate reasons to want to trade somebody, by the way, I agree with you. I think that that type of insubordination, that type of toxicity, I mean, he was toxic at the end. You trade somebody who's in that type of position. But when you trade a player like Rafael Devers, who's making a lot of money and who's a very, very good player, there's two ways you can go about it. You can go about it as, hey, we got this great player, we're going to need something back. And in order for you to give us something back and to pay this guy, we're going to take on half the money, a third of the money, some amount of the money. And that way, you'll still be paying a lot for him, but we're going to be covering part of it, and therefore, we want the return from you to be better than this. We want a power hitter back. We want more major league ready. We want a better prospect back, whatever it is, however they want to negotiate. Or you can do what the Red Sox did. And you can say, hey, we got to trade this guy. He's got a bad attitude. He's being a jerk. He's not moving to first base. He's not doing any of these things. But we'll only trade him to you if you take on all $300 million. And you can give us back whatever you think is fair. But the important thing for us is that you pay that salary. We don't want to pay any of it. We want to be out from under this contract. And if they had agreed to pay part of it, then I think the return would have been better than what they got. I believe that. I don't know how you can't believe that. The return that they got was not very good. And that's sort of the bellwether. That's the barometer of it for me, Steve. Which is not to say that you're wrong, right? They did need to trade him. And the reason that they traded him wasn't solely a financial decision. But the deal that they agreed to and what they ended up actually doing, what he went for, was clearly prioritized by their willingness to take on the entire contract. And that, as a fan, should tick you off. Ticks me off. I'd much rather they had paid some of the money and brought back a power hitter. The fact that they were able to get a team to cover the entire salary means literally nothing to me. I could care less about that. That means nothing. For John Henry, it was a big victory. And for other executives around baseball, they told Jeff Passan, wow, what a great deal. And I'm sure that those executives work on teams that are really into saving money. I doubt those were executives with the Mets. I doubt it was executives with the Dodgers or the Padres. Maybe the Padres, because they had to take out loans with the bank. But the Padres, the Phillies, and Dave Dombrowski, I would imagine it didn't come from one of those teams. I'd imagine it didn't come from the Yankees. If I had to take a stab in the dark here. The Yankees, there was rumors that they were going to lose Aaron Judge. Did they? No, of course not. They're the Yankees. They're not going to lose their stars. The Red Sox, they lose their stars every couple years for nothing. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Here's David Azer. He's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, a lot of Celtics rumors floating around. A lot of potential deals, potential offers, things like that. And also, this Desmond Bane trade may have flown under the radar here. The Memphis Grizzlies trading Bane to the Orlando Magic. However, this is something for the Eastern Conference that the Celtics should be paying attention to. And according to one reporter, the whole trade was just another ripple effect from Jason Tatum's injury. We'll get to that right after David gets you caught up on what's trending.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of sports radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
Stephen A. Smith talking Celtics the other day. Interesting take there. Stephen A., I feel like, has not been... Because that was sort of an optimistic take for the Celtics, all things considered. There haven't been a lot of those since they lost to the Knicks. Ever since they lost to the Knicks, I feel like all the optimism with the Celtics, even with guys like Greeny. And by Greeny, I mean Greeny at Barstool, not Greeny at ESPN. Even the most optimistic Celtics fans are a little down right now. And have been, you know, for a couple weeks, however long ago it was that they got knocked out. Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? Seems like a lot of time has passed. Either way, I think that with all of the... With all of the potential, I mean, we just saw Tatum and Brown undergo surgeries, have their picture taken in the hospital bed. Brown's up and he's around, and I think he was doing something in the city this past week. But now, despite what Stephen A. said right there, which is, you know, see what happens if he's your number one, and you keep Porzingis, and you keep Derek White, and you keep Jrue Holiday, and you do all those things, which, listen, I think that would be maybe not the worst plan you could have, but not one that I think they're going to go forward with. And it's because there's just too many wild cards there. Jaylen Brown being the number one is a wild card in and of itself, but you don't really have a choice there, right? You don't have a choice. You could trade Jaylen Brown, but you're not going to trade Jaylen Brown for a player who's going to be able to come here and be your number one, at least not right away. And I base that off of some of these rumors I see floating around here. Like Sports Illustrated, who proposed the trade of Brown to San Antonio for Stephen Castle, Devin Vassell, and 2 first-round picks. That would not be... I mean, listen, if that's something that they're entertaining, then that tells me that the Celtics are planning to go in a very different direction, a youth movement of sorts, to try and surround Jason Tatum and Derek White, I guess, as the veterans, as the star, and now here we're going to get younger around them. And listen, when you're a dynasty, that's something you have to do. You have to try and make that happen. You have to try and get new, younger players in, draft better. Even with the Warriors, I mean, they whiffed. They had that number 2 pick. They wasted it on James Wiseman. You know, there's been a lot of examples of that type of thing over the years. The Celtics, they got younger around their big three, and unfortunately, the two guys passed away. But, like, you know, that's something that all these teams try and do. Lakers bringing in Byron Scott and, you know, the draft picks that they made, hoping that that would be the next generation of Laker basketball. And with the Warriors, there was other guys too. You know, it wasn't just Wiseman, but like they've, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. That's how you're supposed to evolve. If you want to stay good, then you got to be able to move on at the right time from your veterans, and you also have to draft well enough and maneuver well enough that you can have players in place to start taking over those roles and filling in around your superstars. Especially when guys like Porzingis and Jrue Holiday, who are older, and in Porzingis' case, way broken down. Holiday to a lesser extent. I mean, Holiday went through it with whatever that thumb, the trigger finger on his thumb or the mallet thumb, whatever it was called, hammer thumb, all that. You know, like those seemed like kind of old guy injuries. And Porzingis, no one knows what the hell was wrong with Kristaps Porzingis. Even now, the Celtics got knocked out of the playoffs over a month ago, and we still have no clue what the hell happened with Kristaps Porzingis and what was wrong with him. We still don't know. That's weird, isn't it? At the end of the season, you find out what's wrong with everybody. At the end of every hockey season, whenever the Bruins get knocked out of the playoffs, the next day, we find out every single thing that was wrong with every single player, and we still don't know what's wrong with Kristaps Porzingis? How is that possible? 617-779-7937 is your phone number. That trade, by the way, Jaylen Brown for Castle, Vassell, and 2 first-round picks would be a stark admission that this whole thing, this whole going all the way back to like the big three, the Brown, not the big three of Bird and McCallum Parrish, but the big three of Garnett, Allen, and Pierce, that whole thing, which led to the draft picks, which led to Brown and Tatum, which led to Kyrie, which led to Gordon Hayward, which led to Kemba Walker, which led to Al Horford and everybody else that's sort of come and gone, Derek White, all these guys, that's basically over. And the fact that that entire era only produced two championships, kind of, I don't know. I mean, these are bad problems to have, right? Or Boston sports fans, Celtics fans. Oh, only two championships, that's it. But don't you sort of feel like there's a lot left on the table there? At least with Garnett and Pierce and Allen, you can say, well, they were old. Those guys were old. They were lucky to get one at the end. They probably should have gotten another one, but they were older players, and that was that. This is not what we're seeing now. What we're seeing now is a dynasty interrupted. We're seeing what was supposed to be and what everyone thought was going to be the next great dynasty in the NBA getting upended and potentially not being able to put itself back together again. And if you trade Jaylen Brown for those two guys and a couple of draft picks, then you're officially calling it quits. Because then that means that next year, with no Jason Tatum, your team is going to be Derek White, whoever you trade Holiday for, whoever you trade Porzingis for, or let's say you don't trade them. Let's say it's Derek White, Porzingis, Holiday, Devin Vassell, and Stephen Castle. You think that's a playoff team? Maybe it's a playoff team. Maybe it's a play-in team. I don't know exactly what it is. But it's not something that I'm going to be all that excited about watching, I'll tell you that. And listen, guys get injured. Great players get hurt. Jason Tatum not being there. If Jason Tatum was playing, then that could be that type of team. I still believe that. If Jason Tatum was playing and wasn't coming off of a very, very serious injury that oftentimes leaves players a fraction of what they were, then I still think that this team could be a team to be reckoned with, even if they traded Jaylen Brown and got that sort of thing back. Without him, you might be headed back to the lottery. I think without him, you're certainly, and then trading Brown, then you're certainly a team that's going to be fighting its way out of that play-in game. And for that to happen with this Celtics team, where they were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, to winning that championship, to this, I'll tell you, you got to enjoy these things while you can, because these days they just don't last. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones. Mike is in Connecticut. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Christian.
Hey, Mike.
Well, you hit on a lot of good points, buddy, about the Red Sox. But you know what the saddest thing is? Two things, Christian. One, when they make a trade, for some reason, they never get anything back. I never see anything like it. When you go back to the Ben trade and now the Zebra trade. But the bottom line, Christian, is really in the American League, except for the Yankees, nobody really overspends. It's not like the National League. It's really a disgrace that the Red Sox really are not in the playoffs every year the way it's set up with six teams. And I really wish they would just sell the team.
Yeah, they're not going to. Mike, thanks for the call. I think a lot of people agree with you there. A lot of people wish that they would just sell the team off already, give it to some owners who were like they were back in 2000 and who really want to win and who will do whatever it takes to win, even if it means taking a financial hit. And they're not. They're just not. They're not going to be that group again. They're not going to have those priorities again, and they are not going to sell the team. That's it. There's no reason to. Their empire is expanding. It's not shrinking. They're not trying to get out before they lose a bunch of money. They're doing just fine. And their expansion has meant less attention to the Red Sox. I think that's obvious. And these days, you kind of get the sense that the Red Sox are a number on the ledger. And that while it would be great if they were winning and making deep playoff runs and Fenway Park was freaking electric and everything else, like Sam Kennedy said, that, they're okay if it's not. If it's not, it's not the end of the world. Fenway is an experience. People still want to come. People still want to go, take their picture in front of all the old logos and the concourse there. And I get that. I mean, going to a baseball game is a fun way to spend the day. And if you have kids and everything, that's fine. But I think if you're trying to recapture the 2000s and the 2010s, and according to Passan and Pete Abraham, that was a big priority this year and a big priority for Craig Breslow. We need to get back to those days. We need to get back to that kind of excitement. We need to get back to the fans caring that much. And in doing so, in prioritizing, at least, up front, saying that you're prioritizing that, and then trading Rafael Devers, but only trading him when you can find a team that's willing to take on all his money, and that's the return that you're looking for more so than a player to replace him, well, then you're not really thinking about getting back to 2010. You're not. And I don't know if they can even recognize what 2010 was like for them. Because for them to go from saying that to making that trade tells me that they're just, it's all a distant memory at this point. And there's nothing really left. And I thought when they brought back Theo this year, I was like, ooh, yeah, okay, Theo's back. Where's Theo? What Theo have to say about this trade? Was Theo one of those executives who was like, wow, we got rid of all that money? Awesome. Or was he like, hey, we're trading our best hitter and we're not getting much back? That doesn't seem like the right time to be doing this. And before you call in and say, oh, Arcan, they are actually getting this guy back and this guy back, and this guy was really good in college at Florida State. First of all, I don't care how good the guy was in college at Florida State. Are we supposed to be doing this now? Well, he was really good in college. That doesn't even work in the NBA and the NFL, where they go right from college to the league. In baseball, it takes you at least 4 years after college before you're up there playing. Two or three at the least. I mean, give me a break. I don't know. I mean, if you're a team that's rebuilding and you're looking ahead to the future, then a trade like this makes more sense than it makes for a team like the Red Sox, who spent $40 million this year on Alex Bregman and traded prospects to get Garrett Crochet and spent a lot of money on Chapman and spent on Bueller. That's not what you do when you're rebuilding. Why would a rebuilding team do any of that? And now all of a sudden, well, Devers is really has a bad attitude, so we're going to go back to our rebuilding model. Like, no, sorry, it doesn't work like that. You haven't built up enough trust to be able to try and pull something like that off. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Nelson in Ludlow. Has a thought on Al Horford. Go ahead, Nelson.
Hey, good morning. What's going on?
What's up, Nelson?
Hey, so I just want to talk about Al Horford. He seems like a pretty good leader for the team. Is he someone do we think we need to bring him back next year and kind of bring in a younger class and kind of have him, you know, teach them the ropes and show them how to move forward?
I think that – I'm not sure what his contract status is. Let me look that up here. I think that Al Horford, at the moment, as I pull up his contract, is unrestricted free agent. So that was his – yeah. So they would have to go back to the drawing board with him. They would have to find a deal that made sense. He's going to be 39 years old.
On a vet minimum, though, do you think he's worth it?
I don't know. If he wants to keep playing, I would imagine he probably wouldn't want to on a vet minimum, and he probably wouldn't want to on this Celtics team. Al Horford right now is in like a ring chase. That's like the age he's at. He's at a ring-chasing type of age, and I think he still has something to offer. He wasn't great in the playoffs this year by any means, but I do think he still has something to offer beyond just being a mentor for the younger kids. So if he wanted to keep playing, I would imagine he'd go jump on board. I probably won't go back to OKC. But I would imagine he'd be looking away from the Celtics to a team that was, you know, the Cavs or the Nuggets or, you know, I'm not really sure even who the teams are that you want to look at. And that may be enough for Horford to want to just go ahead and retire. And if you're asking me, I think that's probably what he does. That's what I think it'll be for him. And he's had a great career and was a big, big part of that championship. And I think that Al Horford is a great Celtic. But I don't think you need to really prioritize bringing him back. He wants to come back and, like, coach. He's good enough that he wouldn't just be like, who's that guy on the Heat, David? The guy who just sits at the end of the bench?
Udonis Haslam.
Udonis Haslam. Yeah, he's not going to be Udonis Haslam, okay? Like, he's still good enough that he's not going to be some scrub doofus sitting at the end of the bench threatening to fight the water boy or whatever it was he used to do. Udonis Haslam. I don't think that's where Horford's going to be. So I don't think that that's where he would go. And if he is retiring and he wants to stick around with the Celtics, sure, as like a assistant coach or something like that. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be totally fine with that. And I think he has been a good influence on a lot of these players. But, you know, I mean, eventually you got to just turn the page. And if Horford wants to keep playing, he'll probably go somewhere else. He'll probably sign with another team. That's my guess. But I guess we'll see. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We're going to take a quick break here. When we return, there is interesting story that I saw on Twitter, NBA related. Doesn't have anything to do with the Celtics. But if you've been watching, or if you just haven't happened to notice, Boogie Cousins was playing in China. DeMarcus Cousins, former Sacramento King, he played all over the place. Very, very unpleasant fellow, according to most reports, Boogie Cousins. Was playing in China, someone was harassing him, or not harassing him, but heckling him. Boogie Cousins walks up to the fan who was sitting courtside, reaches into his shorts, grabs a whole handful of himself, and then takes his hand and rubs it on the guy's face. And mind you, DeMarcus Cousins has been running up and down a court, sweating into his jockstrap this entire time. And he runs up, he grabs it right across, right in the guy's face. Pretty rough stuff. And I think he either got kicked out of the league or he got suspended or something happened to him out there. I don't know. It's frowned upon doing that, you know, giving someone the old face wash. But Cousins now is on Twitter saying that a team in the NBA had so much bad stuff going on in the background, fist fights among teammates. He's not talking about the Celtics. I'll tell you who it's about and what they responded with right after this.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of sports radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
11:47 here on this Sunday. It's Christian Arcan, Sunday Mass, Reverend Arcan. Phone number 617-779-7937 if you'd like to join the conversation. Why the Rocky music? I'll tell you why. Because according to Boogie Cousins, the Phoenix Suns were brawling this year. Brawling. Now, I love a good social media call-out. I do. And you know who's good with those? Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is sometimes insufferable online and elsewhere. But when it comes to the back and forths, he is remarkably candid and frank about those things. I'm trying to find the original tweet, the original Boogie Cousins tweet, which was from NBA Central, which is one of those... You know, there's all these NBA, and there's like a bunch of fake ones, too. But NBA Central had the Boogie Cousins tweet, which said that according to Cousins, the Phoenix Suns have had multiple fistfights in the locker room this past season. Seemed like it was a joke. Seemed like it was, you know, one of those fake NBA accounts trying to screw around. But it was a real thing. And here's what they said. DeMarcus Cousins believes or was told by a player on that team that they all hated each other, that they would beef on the bench, and that in the locker room they would fight all the time. And he said that a player told him that. Kevin Durant tweeted back and said, "No, he didn't. That's not true. What are you talking about?" And Cousins said, "What are you calling me a liar?" Blah, 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 blah. You know, gets all upset. It was your teammate. Your teammate said this. And Durant said, "Well, my teammate lied." Sorry. Whoever told you that was not telling you the truth. And it was refuted. Now, I would guess that Kevin Durant is likely not one of the guys getting into a fist fight in the locker room. I don't think so. He doesn't seem like that kind of a hothead. Maybe he was. I have no idea. Kevin Durant denied the report, said that the fights never occurred, and said, "I have to contest this 94-footer," which was the cousin saying that they fought. "I have to contest this 94-footer. This is some BS to throw on us. Yeah, 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 we're trash this year. Ha, ha, ha. But we never got close to this. Never," in all caps. And Cousins came back and said, "Your teammate said this." And Durant said, "Well, my teammate was lying." I love this. I love this for Durant. And I also think it's funny. You talk about the NBA being sort of caught in this weird spiral. Kevin Durant is the main chip of the trade devil. Like, this is what it's going to be another offseason all about Kevin Durant, who's, what, 38 years old? Like, who cares where Kevin Durant plays at this point? He had a good year last year. He was averaging 26 points. He's 36. He's going to be 37. So he's not ancient, but... A guy his size and with his sort of body type and everything, and a guy who they brought into Phoenix to make him a super team, and that team did suck. I mean, that was a suck bag team. And him and Devin Booker were there almost every night, and they couldn't do anything. Bradley Beal missed a lot of time. Those other two guys were out there hooping. And the Phoenix Suns were trash. So pardon me if I don't really care where Kevin Durant ends up going, or am not all that excited about yet another NBA offseason centered around Kevin Durant. I mean, this is one thing when it was 8 years ago and he was going to Golden State. But since then, it's just, all right, well, now he's going here, and now he's going there, and now, up, another offseason. Oh, what's Kevin Durant going to do? I don't care what Kevin Durant does. If he comes to the Celtics, great. If he comes to the Celtics, fine, so long as they don't have to pay him too much. And they want to keep him as like a one-year patch over while they wait for Jason Tatum to come back, and then they kick his ass out after that. Fine, okay, I can hold my nose for a year. It's not like Kevin Durant stinks. But that's about it. I mean, like, you know, there's going to be some team that's going to sign him to be their new centerpiece. Like, I don't think so, not at 37. And yet this is going to be the main thing, or at the very least, the first domino to drop here this NBA offseason. And that, I think, is also a problem for them. It's going to be, this is a bad stretch for the NBA. Bad stretch. You got a bad finals. Whoever wins, it's going to end up being a bad finals. And then you're probably going to have kind of a bad offseason, too. Yeah. This draft's not one that, outside of Cooper Flagg, anybody's excited about. We all know where Flagg's going. So there's no real drama there. And Kevin Durant is supposed to be the big prize of the offseason. Like, ugh. Ugh. Tough year for the NBA. All around tough year.
Not to mention the All-Star games. I mean, the Four Nations face-off did way more numbers than whatever the NBA does.
I forgot about it. The NBA All-Star game this year was the worst thing I've ever seen. I forgot about how truly horrible that was with the four teams, and then they'd do this big break in between each game and these stupid interviews and everything. Okay, now get back out there, everybody. And it was like, oh, my God, what am I watching? What is this? I forgot about how unwatchable that All-Star game was. Thank you for reminding me, David. That was brutal. It's been a bad year for the NBA. This has been a legitimately bad year for them, I think. Before we move off of this topic completely, I teased this and never talked about it. The Desmond Bane trade, Desmond Bane to Orlando for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, four first-round picks and a future swap. First of all, I saw that, and I was like, for Desmond Bane? Desmond Bane. Why would Desmond Bane fetch such a large return? And then I started thinking, well, if Desmond Bane is going to get back two players, four first-round picks, then what could Derek White get you? And while I'm not sure that it would even be the same, it does get you thinking. If this is the type of year where selling off parts can get you big returns like this, the Celtics aren't a team that's building for the future, and I didn't really think that Memphis was either, but it seems like this is kind of a future-looking type of move. And also, like, Orlando needs to get better at shooting from the outside, but Caldwell Pope was, like, their one guy. Like, he was their one guy who could do that. Now, Bane's better than Pope, I think. Better all-around player. Bigger guy, you know, bigger and tougher and everything like that. But, man, one guy for all that, that was startling. And then I was reading Tim Bonton, which is French for Tim Good Times. And he mentioned that this is all just further shrapnel in the latest ripple from the Achilles tear sustained by Jason Tatum. And Bontemps writes, there is every reason to hope and believe that Tatum will return to full strength after the injury. The doctor who performed the surgery, Martin O'Malley, from the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York, also repaired Durant's Achilles in 2019, but in the short term, it all but certainly has removed Boston as the dominant force in the East for this upcoming season after being in that position for most of the past several years. That has created an opening for teams to strike. One executive said for them, they got to give themselves a chance, Orlando. They have gone to the playoffs 2 years in a row and had a first-round exit, and they look around and they've got a young group that's trying to figure out how to take the next step. In theory, in the middle of the year, you would have thought Indiana was in their group too, and that you wouldn't have thought that they could get over the top, and the two best teams were clearly Cleveland and Boston. But with Boston not being there next year, it's going to be fascinating to see how much of a win-now approach is going to take place, because every team is going to think that they can do what Indiana just did. And he's right. The Celtics, despite not really being a dynasty at all, despite just being a good team that underachieved for a bunch of years before they finally broke through and won one, were considered the class of the Eastern Conference. And even though they got knocked out fair and square by the Knicks this year, even before that Tatum injury, no one has even come close to stepping in. No one believes that the Pacers are considered to say, hey, we could be the Pacers. No one thought, hey, we could be the Celtics. Nobody thought that. The Orlando Magic, they weren't like, yeah, we could just be the Celtics if a couple other things happen. No. But you look at the Pacers, and they think we could do that. And that, again, speaks to just how lacking there is of any kind of order in the league right now. Any kind of real order. It is anybody's ball game out there. And that may be exciting for teams that aren't normally in the mix. And, you know, maybe we'll see like Atlanta and Chicago and some of these other really bad teams. Washington. If any of them start to behave differently. But I don't know. I think teams like that are so far gone that even with this whole Indiana thing, you're not talking about them making that leap. You still got to be better than Milwaukee. You still got to be better than the Knicks. You still got to be better than the Pacers and the Cavs and the Celtics and everybody else, even the beat-up Celtics. So I don't think any team looks at it and says, hey, we could do that. But any team in the top six or even the top five. And why wouldn't you think that? There's no reason not to. The only thing that can save this offseason, if it's an offseason that's all about Kevin Durant, it's cooked. If Giannis gets traded, now we're talking. They move Giannis to some other team, okay, I'm ready to get back to the table here, NBA. I'm ready to see what's next in store. But right now, this path that they're on, I think, is not a good one and not good for business. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We got 1 hour to go here. It's the Christian Arcand Show on a Sunday. That makes it Sunday Mass, which means when we come back, we will talk David Ortiz, Big Poppy, who is continuing to bash Rafael Devers, this time in an Instagram Live, which was all in Spanish, so I had to wait for people to translate it for me. But he is not holding back on Devers, and it is a far cry from statements that he made just a couple of weeks ago when Devers was refusing to move over to first base. We'll get to all of that next.